I am going to dunk on podcasts for an entire episode. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Podcasts have been around for a very, very long time. Outside of the arguments that you see from people like Dave Weiner about when podcasts become podcasts, we've been creating some regular audio programs for years and years. There's a wonderful pre-podcast set of tapes you could get that would be mailed to your house and which you could play on your tape recorder. It was, in other words, nothing new. What has always made the digital side of things exciting is that the costs of distribution have been shifted farther and farther away from the content creator. It still costs you money to make a podcast now, but related to how one might do radio or television or records or really any other format going into the past, the cost of having your podcast getting out to a potentially large, large audience is the smallest it has ever been. As the number of podcasts, in quotes, increases, so too do the same questions. What are they for? What makes a good podcast? Where is a podcast doing something that any of a number of other formats aren't? It fills up virtual columns, it's beautiful clickbait, and it is, frankly, a distraction. I'm mostly interested in using whatever historical perspective I have to talk about where podcasts are now and to give you some speculation as to where they're headed. The most shocking thing about podcasts is that this is not at all the first time around. Podcasts have been through a number of boom and bust situations, and what is really interesting to me is that, well, it seems like people have forgotten what it was like and that a lot of the arguments of the present day are what we already had before. There were shows that were basically podcasts on the internet of the 1990s. You'd have to go to a website or an FTP site, download a MP3 or an MP2 or a number of other strange formats, and then listen to that show. They'd be bundled up as archives, and it would take you a bit of time to pull each one down. They generally had a talk show format. They generally had pretty good metadata because it wasn't easy to get to them. And they covered subjects of all types, but there was a very strong sense that they were on something very new and very brilliant on that incarnation of the internet. In the early 2000s, a marrying of the RSS feed format along with multimedia containers, including MP3s, allowed a much more automatic distribution. If you had some sort of client or newsreader, it could pull down these podcasts and make them playable. And the name podcast itself implies that you're getting some sort of radio experience and that it's going on to your portable MP3 playing device, your iPod. Throughout 2002, 2003, and going into 2004, people who are into experimentation, who are comfortable in front of a microphone, who want to build an audience, and who are happy to keep plugging away, creating new content, start creating a variety of podcasts. Somewhere in there, press gets involved. Writing about disruptive things is exciting, and it gets past an editor. Editors like cases where somebody is going to break the news that something new is coming along and everything is going to change, both because it's exciting and because fear sells. Podcasts are held up as a brand new form of entertainment and information. Particularly experimental and hungry media formats start using what they call podcasts, but which are essentially additional readings of news programs or things they're already providing in other formats. networks begin generating, quote-unquote, podcasts that are just repackaged shows from radio and television and presenting them on podcast directories. This is entirely logical. If you're making the stuff anyway, why not just add it to another format with a simple bit of programming? And then, around 2004, the real question comes in. Can you make money at this? Can you start a career in podcasts? Leave aside the fact that you may not have the training involved in doing broadcasting or producing a show on a regular basis, that you might not know about how to deal with that 6-week slump or that 20-episode slump that affects so many early projects. Can you cobble together some sort of package that on a regular basis can earn you income? The answer, by pure math, is no. The chances of somebody having the technical expertise, the ability to entertain, the ability to package something on a regular basis, and attract the kind of audience numbers that would lead in any way to a sizable income is incredibly small. That's not a knock against folks. It's just a very, very hard thing to do. The answer to that is then to have somebody whose job is just to grow the audience, who is just to edit things, who is just to do fact-checking or scripts or story ideas, and then have a dedicated host who does one show and aggregating all that, producing something people want. But then your costs are higher. To pay and support people, to be able to make podcasting their single and only job, you start to have to assemble a network. This network itself is even hungrier. You're starting to run into the problems of human resources, of figuring out if you're in compliance with all the employment laws, of trying to keep track of the taxes. And ever approaching from every side is the worry that the numbers of your audience will go down, that the field will become too crowded, that you won't be able to compete, and that you will fail to maintain those numbers. If this sounds like the dull, gray approach of a business, it is. What did they do in the 2000s? Well, the same thing they're doing now. Get more and more and more aggressive advertisers. Find companies that are willing to take a risk and, instead of spending the amount of money they would on television, spend it on podcasts where they can split it among a bunch of different audiences and groups and still get possibly the same return. If you've been listening to podcasts from all sorts of sources and all sorts of networks and suddenly realizing that the same few advertisers are there to the point that it is a joke people bring up, that's why. One or two companies figured out that the $1 million that would earn them a few minutes on network television will earn them endless mentions from willing and grateful hosts on all sorts of podcasts all over that landscape. From there, we're on a train. Anybody can see the tracks are leading to a bridge that is out. To be able to even find these sort of whale advertisers, podcasts have to turn to brokers, brokers whose job is to know who is spending the millions of dollars and where to find them. What they want is to find audiences, audiences that are 10,000 or more, as one industry metric puts it, but usually they want something around 100,000 for the big accounts. In those cases, they will pay pretty good money, but they will ask a lot out of the read. They don't want you to just say that it was brought to you by a product. They want you to describe the product. They want you to even maybe read their copy about how much you love the product. Maybe the person who runs the podcast wants to have some amount of integrity. For me, you've already walked into the slaughterhouse. You're just arguing how much terrible you want to see. You can say that you want to write the copy. You can say that you want some of the product to test with your family. But all that does is cause you to turn a commercial into a book report about how much you use some sort of equipment or enjoy some sort of service. It's often recorded at a different time than the podcast, so you sound a little different, you sound a little forced, you sound not like yourself. So this otherworldly, not you, talks about a product you otherwise wouldn't discuss on this podcast to a canny and frankly skeptical audience. This happened in 2005 and 2006, and now it's happening again in 2019. The fact that it is happening in a way that people are finding credulous and in some way new just tells me that the tech reporting sphere has had enormous, painful turnover. The people who were reporting on the tech industry in the 2000s are no longer the people who are reporting it in the 2010s. The memory is forgotten, but I didn't forget. So, spoiler alert, here's what's going to happen. First, like scared creatures against a coming storm or afraid of the rain, podcasts begin to consolidate. They begin to go under the umbrella of networks with certain kinds of guarantees enabling them to keep recording. Those podcast aggregate networks are then acquisition networks for what we call older media. Although, honestly, these are often independently running subsidiaries of large, older media who are mostly using them either for vanity or to keep their eyes open as a speculative case. Condé Nast owns Reddit for a reason, and it's not because they like what Reddit does. These aggregate content networks will be acquired by media in headline-grabbing situations, millions of dollars thrown down. The acquisition of Gimlet Media is currently ringing in the ears of folks, but it won't be long before others find themselves courted. And the one thing I have learned in decades of watching this story play out is that, basically, everybody's got a number. Everybody has a number. Their independent spirit, their ferocity of personality, these are things that will make them hard to acquire, but it doesn't make them unacquirable. The resulting partnership may be doomed, but it can still happen. A company or coalition that turns its nose up at a $1 million offer on the sense of principle and keeping to their character and spirit probably won't do so at 20 or 50 or 500 million. Those offers will come. In the most ideal situation, these acquired properties, no longer to be called podcasts, will be kept independent. Other ones will add some sort of branding to the beginning. Maybe there will be some sort of heartfelt special episode, a very special episode, where the host will explain to you why getting something like $500 million was perfectly okay and won't really change anything. The easiest way to kill this property will be to make it an exclusive, to make a contract with some sort of other content aggregator and say that your property will only be available there. Others will do something a little bit less restrictive, perhaps have an episode appear in one place and then 6 months later go to the other places. Either way, the relationship is changed. The immediacy is gone. I think in terms of history in general, we benefit more from knowing how something happened over and over instead of being told about one specific event as if it was unique and had never been seen before and would never be seen again. If you pull back, if you look at these repeated echoes of what happens over and over again, to me, you're more informed. You're able to see where it's happening again instead of getting focused way too much on the uniqueness or the actual specific details of one specific echo. Computer history has this everywhere. Game history has this everywhere. Different masks worn by different crowds where only the numbers and the names change. And here, to me, is why I decided to do this. I see in my own recording of this podcast an echo of where I've been before, where I've been a part of something that I know in my heart will crash against the rocks, reform, and come again in a wave years or maybe decades later. I do this with my eyes open. I put my efforts into recording this because I enjoy it, because I see the results of it, because I had a problem of debt and of owing things and the emotional weight that came with it, and I saw an opportunity to use the motivation to dig myself away from that debt while also reaching out to people who wanted to hear what I had to say. My reasons, in other words, were personal. They were and are about connecting. About connecting dots between my own life and where I am now. About connecting things that I've seen to things that are happening in other locations and taking that knowledge and maybe pushing people in a direction of even greater enlightenment. To think about, in a linear manner, subjects that have rattled around in my mind since I first put my hands on a keyboard, and to see if, when I say them, they sound anywhere near as interesting or informative as I had hoped they would. To rehearse and then perform, on a stage, my thoughts, to see how valid they are, and to throw them away if it turned out they weren't. That's my motivation for podcasts. Money is, definitely, somewhere in there. But I know it. I put it into every show, and I make it clear where I'm going with it. It is my sincerest hope that the rest of the podcast world will somehow swim up through the clickbait headlines, the numbers, and the constant, endless refrain that this is all normal and the way it works, that they themselves be transparent, forthright, truthful, and most importantly of all, remember why they started. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Forrest Fuqua, James Bakoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Adam Green, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who are helping me stay out of debt. It is, without question, an unmitigated joy that I can press record on a device, talk into it, tell you my feelings, and share it to you all over the country, all over the world, and do it in a way that can come back and be replayed and enjoyed and shared. I love the honesty of that. I love the ability to make it happen, and I hope you will continue to do it with me for some time to come.